after 8 o'clock Sunday morning. You are listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM at 1340 AM. Flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. Will we get to say 2019? We'll see. I am Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday at the same time, live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. Also here, back from the Shark Tank in San Jose, and now directly in front of me on your radio dial, Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent, Out of Line producer Chris Magnum Chapman, and also in studio, the man, the myth, the Facebook camera pro. He's got an announcement to make, and it's a good one. We'll do that in a little bit. Jose Sudden Death Vellante. He got a nickname that he never knew he got. We are streaming on the Las Vegas Sports Network, and you can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM, and you can watch us on Facebook Live. The Facebook page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. The show is live, in theory, interactive. We work on it, so call in and be heard. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is sponsored by our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. The Golden Knights drop one game. They dropped game one and scared the hell out of us in game two. But when the smoke cleared, they're headed home with the best of seven series tied at one game apiece. Alan Snell, who is in San Jose with Magnum for the first two games, will join us for Nightcap. After over 6 years, I am finally blazing. You'll find out why. Also, stick around because this Wednesday, we are having Community Day at Buffalo Wild Wings. And everybody is invited. We'll tell you about that as my good friend and general manager Dave Musa joins the show in a little while. And the brand new Las Vegas ballpark, home of the Las Vegas Aviators, the AAA franchise of the Oakland A's, opened in downtown Summerlin last week. And a little later in the show, Aviators manager Fran Riordan will join and talk about the Red Hot Aviators 9-1 to start the season. And they're playing in the nicest minor league ballpark in the country. It's amazing. What's on Tap comes your way thanks to the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
With Stone setting it in front for Tuck. Now left wing Stastny, left point. Theodore shoots, tipped on goal, save, rebound, score! Knights take the lead back. It's Mark Stone, 4-3 Golden Knights, 90 seconds into the second period. Won by the Sharks, right point. Eric Karlsson rims it to the trapezoid. Poked away from Evander Kane. Back out to the right point, Karlsson. One-time shot from Burns, wide left. Then Fleury got slashed, no call. 8 seconds, man goes down behind the net, that's Kane. Puck to the right point, Karlsson shot, blocked to the near side with two, with one. Knights control it, game over. Knights win it, 5-3. After the fact, shoving and fisticuffs. Evander Kane at the center. Derek Englund with several punches. He's had enough. McNabb is in there as well for the Knights. Evander Kane spearheading this altercation. Timo Meier also in there for the Sharks with Joe Thornton. And this is continuing to escalate between Kane and Englund.
Yeah, it got a little chippy right at the end of the game. These two teams are playing physical hockey. It is a first-round battle. And I'll tell you what, I think every one of us, after the Knights went up 3-0 in game two, kind of breathed a sigh of relief, like, okay, here we go again. They look like themselves. And all of a sudden, something we talked about last week on the show, the one thing with the Sharks, yes, their netminder, Martin Jones, a little bit shaky on a good day. But this team can score in bunches. They're loaded with superstars, and they can score quickly, in a hurry, intimidate you, and they can beat you up. And all of a sudden, with about 5 minutes to go in the first period, the Sharks exploded. Three quick goals, two of them, Fleury had absolutely no chance. And I'm listening to people like, oh, my God, look at Pullen put Subban in. People, pay attention. Two of the shots he had, I mean, God himself might have been the only guy that could have made those saves. The team just slacked on defense. They got on their heels for a minute, and the Sharks just attacked, pounded. But when it all was said and done, a goal that was taken away in the second period that I'm sorry I thought was a goal. I didn't think there was goalie interference. I thought he was shoved into the goaltender, but we'll take it. It was taken away. The Golden Knights turn it around. They get the next goal, and the bottom line is from that point forward, they never look back.
Wait, did you just say you didn't think there was goaltender interference on that play?
First of all, I thought that Fleury was out of the crease when he got hit.
And, but he's allowed to be out of the crease when he's playing the puck.
But the defensive player was also had his back to Fleury and was getting shoved into him.
Here's the part where you're missing, though. Logan Couture elbowed Marc-Andre Fleury in the head. That's illegal player. That you can't hit a player in the head.
I saw that, and it definitely was flagrant if you look at it. But again, in fast motion and the way that the game was played, I thought it looked like he got pushed into the player. I thought it was very...
Pushed or not, you can't hit the goalie in the head with your elbow.
Yeah, but it's almost like he found the goalie's head with his elbow because he wasn't... He was there.
No, he was high. His arms were high, and that's why he hit Fleury in the head with his elbow.
Okay.
Out of the crease or not... You can't hit a guy in the head. It's clear as day. I mean, and that's why San Jose took the penalty, because he hit him in the head with the elbow.
They complained a lot about it.
I don't care if they complain. They can complain all they want by the rule that you can't hit a guy in the head with the elbow.
I love goaltender interference. It has changed so many games in the National Hockey League.
Well, the reality is nobody really knows what's goaltender interference or not.
There's no definition,
but,
man. There's no
You know, the thing is, Logan Couture... And I thought the refs did a good job. Whether or not the San Jose fans or Peter DeBoer, I don't really care. They're wrong.
Okay.
And Peter DeBoer knows he's wrong.
You were there. I wasn't. I was watching on television from a bar, so I might have missed. I might not have seen something because I was watching. Wow, I'll take it.
And you can't hit the guy in the head with the elbow. I mean, that's pretty clear cut.
Okay. So on the line right now, joining us, I believe he's driving back from San Jose. He took a little extra time. He took a little extra time there, decided to hang around for a day or two. Good friend Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. And, Alan, did you pull over to the side of the road, or you got your Bluetooth going?
Well, I pulled an audible, Brian, and I actually came back a day early to get some rest and get ready for Game 3 tonight at the Big Ice House.
I love it. And, you know, you were down there with Chris for the game.
Sat right next to the man.
You got to see what most of us saw from here. After game one, all of us were a little bit scared and shell-shocked. And, you know, the concerns were there. The first line didn't put the puck in the net. All the scoring was done by the Vegas Golden Knights. Leading scorer who came over at the trading deadline, Mark Stone. What an unbelievable acquisition. And there's an article, matter of fact, headlining the sports section of the Review Journal today. And it's a pretty good one. You know, polished stone, but he is a gem. And... But I'll tell you what, even though it was shorthanded, it was so nice to see William Karlsson put a puck in the net in game two and get on the scoreboard just to light him up. He's played well. He's taken some shots on goal, but he needed to put the puck in the net. Alan, what did you see in the games, the two games there with this team? Do you see a team that's poised and ready to make a run in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, I saw two teams. I think game one, we saw the team that was kind of flat and... just did not bring their A game, and as Gallant said, they got beat in every facet of the game. And then we saw a different team in game two, and that was the Misfits team that Gallant had wanted to see this particular season. And it was, you know, a typical Golden Knights game where, you know, the scoring chances came from every angle. And if I recall, they had not only Carlson's goal was shorthanded, but Colin Miller scored a shorthanded two. He was back in the lineup, so I saw you in a nutshell. You saw the season. Game one was kind of the slow start without Schmidt. Game two was the team we saw after Stone was acquired.
Yeah, and another guy that put the puck in the net, not part of the Misfits last year, but a guy that has really fit into this team this year, Max Pacioretty. You know, two of the goals came from guys that did not play on this team last season in the playoffs and are huge acquisitions and are both going to continue to have to play really big for this team down the road. And I'll ask both of you this, Chris and Alan, but, you know, three of the last four regular season home games at T-Mobile Arena were losses, including, you know, losing their last couple of games. I know you throw that out the window. It's the playoffs. T-Mobile Arena has been the friendly confines for this team. Other than the Stanley Cup Finals, this team just completely maximized that sixth or seventh man on the ice, whatever you want to call it, which would be the people in the fortress. It's incredible. Is that going to change? Chris, are they good now?
You know what? I don't think they're good now because I still feel like they didn't really play their game on Friday night. They still committed eight, you know, a lot of penalties. They still had eight power or penalty kills that they had to kill there. So, you know, that's not the Golden Knights game. And the reality is Golden, at some point, that's going to burn them if they continue to do that. You know, they played great 5-on-5. I mean, they've been the better team in the series 5-on-5. The problem is that 4-on-4, 3-on-3, 4-on-5, where San Jose is a much better team. What makes it dangerous for San Jose and why you saw two shorthanded goals, they play two defensemen on their power play, Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns. And the way that they play, it allows the Golden Knights forecheck, at least on the power play or penalty kill, to create turnovers. And we saw Colin Miller right out of the box, a horrible play by Erik Karlsson, allowed Colin Miller to break free. And then on the William Karlsson goal, a horrible play by Brent Burns, Riley Smith with an unbelievable pass. I mean, that's enough people aren't talking about that Riley Smith pass to William Karlsson.
Gorgeous.
I mean, that was as pinpoint perfect as you can get in that situation. You know, Riley Smith is kind of the forgotten guy on that line because everyone talks about Karlsson and Marchessault. Riley Smith's forecheck and his play on the penalty kill is unbelievable. Since that guy's come back from injury, I think he's been the MVP of the team.
Riley Smith is, to me, one of the most proficient distributors in the National Hockey League. And there's a reason he's on that first line, and he really does anchor that first line. Marchessault and Karlsson are all over the place, man, and they can score in bunches. But Riley Smith is really the rock of that first line. And when all three of them are healthy and playing together, Chris, I agree, they're as good as can possibly be. And, you know, you mentioned Erik Karlsson and the giveaway to Colin Miller on the breakaway. You know, Erik Karlsson became a different player after that. All of a sudden, it's like that dude just started playing hockey to his capability. He was really playing bad at the beginning of that game.
The reality is, and no one, you know, it'll be forgotten because Vegas ended up winning the game. But Colin Miller's cross-check penalty when Vegas had a 5-on-3 really changed the game. I think there was a 5-on-3. I don't know if San Jose had killed the penalty or not when Miller took that cross-check. But he's going to the bench. He cross-checks a guy, goes to the box. All of a sudden, your advantage is now even. And 4-on-4, San Jose's better. And Vegas had some bad luck on that because San Jose scored with 4 seconds remaining on their penalty. So the 4-on-4 escalated into a 5-on-4 for San Jose just because of those 4 seconds. So if Vegas had killed the 4-on-4 for 4 more seconds, San Jose only would have had that one goal on the power play. Miller would have come out of the box and everything maybe is different. But in that game, San Jose, me and Alan witnessed history because San Jose is the first team in the history of the NHL. And I don't know if it's the playoffs or just the league in general, to fall down 3-0 in the first period and tie the game by the end of the period. I think it's the first team in the playoffs in NHL history. It would make more sense because it seems like there's just been so many games played in the history.
Brian, just adding on to what Chris said, you know, Smith has been, I think, arguably the most valuable two-way player on the team. He's often out there on the penalty kill. And also another player who we haven't talked about, also, who has really stepped up his game, great two-way player, is Cody Eakin. You know, I mean, he has emerged as a legitimate 20-goal scorer this season, and if I recall correctly, Chris, I think he got things going in Game 2 with a goal.
Yeah, 58 seconds into the game, Cody Eakin scores.
Right.
And, you know, Gerard Gallant had mentioned in the afternoon presser that he was kind of hoping for a fast start because, you know, a lot of people feel that that's integral for their success, and they got it. Cody Eakin comes out. It was a line change for the Golden Knights. So there are a couple guys who normally don't skate together on the ice. And in that game, I don't know if a lot of people noticed this, but Gallant started the line of Pacioretty, Stone, and Stastny. The second line on the ice for the Golden Knights was not Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith. It was Eakin, Nosek, and Tuck. So those guys were on the ice for that goal, where normally it would have been the line of Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, and William Carlson, or Pacioretty, Stone, and Stastny that would have been that second line right on the ice. But for whatever reason, and maybe for matchup purposes, Gerard Gallant went with that third line, which is normally the third line of Eakin, Tuck, and Nosek. And, you know, Nosek, I don't think, was on the ice for that goal. I think Tuck and Eakin were, along with, I want to say, with Stone or Pacioretty. I can't remember who. But, yeah, I mean, they were able to get that goal. And, really, it was exactly what the Golden Knights needed, because it started the floodgates opening on Martin Jones. And the third time Martin Jones has been pulled against Golden Knights in the playoffs.
Well, we know the story with Martin Jones. It's been that way all year. Inconsistency on his best night, and the Golden Knights are between those 6 inches between his ears, man. They are in his melon. And once they start scoring against the guy, like I said, he reminds me of the goaltender in Slapshot when he was seeing a bunch of pucks. He just couldn't stop anything. And Martin Jones, really, to me, he'll be the eventual demise of the Sharks, be it against the Golden Knights or down the road, if they're the ones that end up moving on. And, Alan, look at it, and looking at Marc-Andre Fleury, you got a chance to see him in these first two playoff games. We saw him come back and return to play against Arizona in the regular season finale at T-Mobile, then against the Kings. Even though those were two losses, everyone talked about the fact Marc-Andre Fleury played well. The team in front of him more or less let him down in those couple games. What have you seen from Marc-Andre Fleury in the playoffs? Do you see him being the sharp, tenacious cat that he was last year, or do you think he also has to step up his game a little bit?
I think the latter. I mean, I don't think you can blame too many of the goals on him. I don't think there are too many softies in there, but at the same time, you know, I didn't get the sense this was the Fleury we saw last year, and especially in the first three rounds. So I think he's still, you know, rounding into his closer self.
Well, you know, and he's got time to do that. You know, all it takes is one or two really, really dynamic saves, and it can change the dynamics of an entire playoff run for a goaltender. And Fleury's the kind of guy that you know, gathers that confidence with every win. In a game like last game, the cool thing is, when you really break it down, he did not give up a goal after the first period. And after that melee at the end of the first period, that would shake most goaltenders. I mean, a goaltender is like a defensive back to a degree in football, where you have got to have a very short memory. If you don't, you will end up failing big time. And Marc-Andre Fleury, throughout his career, has proven that he can have a short memory, not just from game to game, but from period to period. And I thought he played much better, obviously, after the first period. But like I said, two of the three goals that I saw at the end of the first were not his fault in any way, shape, or form. So I'll ask both you guys and go one at a time. Start with Alan, being on the phone, and then we'll go to Chris. But what is it going to take for this Golden Knights team at this point? They come back to T-Mobile Arena today. They, you know, we all know two games are behind them. It's now the best of five series. What's it going to take for the Golden Knights to win the best of five series? The cool thing is in that best of five series, they now have home ice advantage.
Yeah, I just think it comes down to two things. Number one, they just got to get off the penalties. I mean, they didn't get into the flow of the first two games because they're constantly killing penalties. So they got to play smart, eliminate the penalties, and number three, eliminate the giveaways. I mean, that's, to me, you know, otherwise, the Golden Knights, to me, are a little more offensively potent this postseason compared to year one. And last year, they really relied on Fleury to close out the games, very close, 2-1, 1-0 games. This year they have, I think, a little more offensive firepower. But that said, I think they have to eliminate the penalties and eliminate the giveaways.
Chris? Chris, before you answer, I want to say this. One of the things, it was a late penalty in the third period that aggravated the hell out of Gerard Gallant that Tomas Nosek made, that that you could just see he was furious on the bench. Do you think that penalty could be a thing that maybe puts Nosek in a scratch category and brings back Carpenter?
I'm not sure. You know, it's interesting because unfortunately from where me and Alan sit, it's really hard to see a lot of the reactions on the bench. The auxiliary press box at San Jose is not exactly the ideal situation for press to be in. But, I don't think Nosek has played great in the series, although I do think Nosek provides a little more power on the PK because he has the capability to score. To be perfectly honest with you, and maybe Alan will agree, I was very shocked to not see Ryan Carpenter play in one of those first two games because Ryan Carpenter, to me, is the quintessential Golden Knight. He's a blue-collar guy. He doesn't care about his stats. He goes out. He does his job. He never takes penalties. To me, he's a perfect guy in a game like in a game like tonight because he doesn't take penalties. Gerard Gallant can rely on him to get the job done. He's got good chemistry with Cody Eakin and Alex Tuch. I mean, I like Tomas Nosek, too, because I think Nosek adds a little more offensive capability, and I think he's maybe a little bit better on the PK because he forechecks well on the PK, but I'm going to agree with Alan. The Golden Knights really need to cut down on the penalties because, like, I was talking to JT the Brick this morning, and we both agreed the slashing penalties are really a killer because you know you can't do that. I mean, it's not like a holding penalty or a hooking where sometimes it's just bad luck. I mean, slashing is as egregious as they come when it comes to a penalty because you absolutely know when you do it, you're breaking a rule. So they do have to cut down on the penalties. I think tonight they're going to win. I wouldn't be shocked if they won big. I don't know if mentally San Jose is in this series because you see Evander Kane coming unglued. We saw it at the end of game two. We saw it at portions in game one. I think the Golden Knights are going to really make it a point of emphasis to get that guy completely out of his game because he's a cancer. And he's a great player.
You got to get him between his head.
That's the worst part about it. Evander Kane is such a great player. I mean, he single-handedly created that third goal for San Jose on Friday night. He had a great goal against Golden Knights on Wednesday night. When he's not taking part in the garbage nonsense after the whistle and after the game, he's a very, very good player. But I have such a hard time rooting for a guy like that and liking a guy like that because he's a cheap shot artist, and I don't like that part of the game. To me, be a man. You know what? You want to talk smack to Ryan Reeves? Get on the ice and do it. Don't hide behind the bench and talk smack. You want to take a run at Mark Stone? Do it in the game, not after the final horn. Don't be a chump.
Yeah, Tommy Wilson at least gets in your face and fights you. He'll throw some cheap shots.
Wilson's a cheap shot artist, but he's also not a coward.
No, he is not a coward. That's probably the difference between those two players. And the one thing I did want to say, Chris, what the biggest surprise to me is, you know, Alan mentioned it, that yesterday we saw the team with the chip on their shoulder play a little bit, I should say Friday night. The one thing that I thought about why Ryan Carpenter should be in the lineup, the chip is the biggest with him when they play the San Jose Sharks. Yeah. Why would you not have a guy that still is bothered by a team that hardly put him in the lineup when he feels he should have been? He came over to the Golden Knights.
They released
last year.
Him. Not only did they not play him, they released
correct.
Him.
Correct. And that's why guys like that, that's, you know, and I'm not, I hate sitting there questioning Gerard Gallant at all, but I thought Ryan Carpenter is one of the guys you find a way to put him in the lineup against his former team. Guys always play well against their former teams. I can't say always, but it's kind of a rule of thumb. You give a guy a shot against his over team because he always wants to prove something. A little bit bothersome, but again, and that's why I was thinking Nosek might be gone, and you might see Carpenter in the lineup, but we will see. Alan, real quickly, check out sportsbiz.com. Some great articles, also some good stuff on the Aviators, LVSportsbiz.com. But make sure you check out his article on the Aviators. Alan, last thing I'll say, I'll let you go. We got a chance to be there on opening night down at the Las Vegas new ballpark. I'm going to be talking to Fran Riordan, the manager of the 51s. But how cool is that baseball park?
You know, Brian, I can't think of another baseball team that moved from such a poor old ballpark to an exquisite gem of a ballpark like the Aviators. I mean, going from Cashman to the new Aviators ballpark in Summerlin, is stunning. You can't even compare the two venues. I would compare this at the Major League Baseball level. I covered the Seattle Mariners going from the Kingdom, which was, I think, that along with the Tampa Bay Rays ballpark is among really one of the all-time worst stadiums, to Safeco Field. I think it's called T-Mobile Field at this point, but I would almost compare it to the Kingdom going to the new ballpark in Seattle. I mean, the gap between the two ballparks is unbelievable. You'll walk around Aviators Ballpark on the main concourse, and there are sections of the concession stands that have such nice architectural touches that you will think that you're in a Major League Baseball park, which is what they're shooting for. Keep in mind, Brian, this is a $150 million minor league baseball park, and usually minor league parks can be built for $75, $80, $100 million. This is $150 million.
Yeah, it's almost twice as much.
Really, the Taj Mahal of minor league baseball facilities.
Alan, I couldn't agree with you more. The only thing, and I'll say it. I'm sure Jimmy Gemma would agree with me partially on it. The press box does leave something to be desired.
They could use some more space.
Some more. I mean, the other press box at Cashman was all one little space. It wasn't huge, but the actual sitting area and enjoy it was in a whole different area. And now it's like all mushed together. It's a little bit tough. But other than that, the public doesn't have to deal with that. We do. The rest of the state.
Also, Brian, huge business boon. I mean the crowds are hitting 10,000 and more. They're considered sellouts for the first home games, and also the concession stands were pretty busy last night. I did a story on, you know, keep in mind, Brian, that, you know, the we're living in a time here in Las Vegas where things are going to get more expensive if you want to be a sports fan in this market. I mean, it's great to have major league teams and shiny new ballparks and stadiums and arenas, but
they create
that
overhead.
It means it's more expensive. So, you know, it's a great time to be a fan, but there's also kind of what I would call a sports gentrification process going on as well.
I would agree 100%, and we're going to see it only continue with the new football stadium that will be constructed.
Correct.
And ready to be played in 2020. He is Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. Appreciate you, my friend, and we will see you tonight at T-Mobile Arena.
Have a great day. I'll see you at the Big Ice House.
Absolutely. Again, Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. Check it out. Over 50,000 subscribers strong and growing every single day. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio. On the other side, we've got some blazing. We've got Fact This. We'll talk 51s. We will talk we'll talk about a lot of things. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. Blazin' brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A long slap shot from Centennial Hills Hospital in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. They have two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And shortly, we will be talking about Community Day coming up this Wednesday. I will be there. And should have a lot of people there as well. It's going to be a good time. All kinds of stuff going on at Community Day. And Dave Musa, I should say, the manager of Buffalo Wild Wings, will be joining us in a little bit. Right now, I do want to say, though, what is blazing today? And you know what? My predictions have been kind of blazing. I'm going to give myself, hey, you know what? 5 years I have never made myself blazing, no matter what predictions I've ever done. And we're going to do it right now. But, Chris, last week we had Frank Harnish on the show before the playoffs started, after the conclusion of the season. And we were talking about this coming, you know, all the playoffs in general. And this is what we said about the Tampa Bay Lightning Columbus Blue Jacks series.
Tampa Bay had a great year last year. What happened to them in the playoffs? Last I remember, they were not hoisting the Stanley Cup.
They better be careful this year, too, because the Blue Jackets are just the kind of team that could absolutely upset them again. And it would not. I am... going out on a limb, believe it or not, and I am predicting a first-round upset for the President Cup Tampa Bay Lightning.
Well, then you need to go to the sports book as soon as this show is over.
I am.
Because you can probably get some pretty decent odds.
I am.
I did it on Texas Tech, didn't I?
No, you did.
I did it on Texas Tech.
The Columbus Blue Jackets, what I like about them, they went all in. But they went all in a time when it might not have been the smartest time to
I'm
go all
disagreeing.
In. Because Tampa Bay, 62 wins. That's historical what they've done this year. Anything but a Stanley Cup championship for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Not only disappointment, kind of a disaster.
Yeah.
Especially after last year again.
Yeah,
but is it really a disaster? Because they gave Cooper a contract extension. Well, they can get swept in the first round, and he's still back.
That's true. Cooper is going to still be back, and they very well might get swept in the first round. They're back to right now, going back to Columbus, and in Ohio, they don't ever have to leave Ohio. If the Columbus Blue Jackets can win the next two games, that series is over with, and we will see another President's Club team take one on the chin, literally. It has been amazing. Tampa Bay just looks like a completely different team. I won't say skating in wet cement, but they're just not the same team we saw through the regular season. Can they get it together? Oh, my God, look at how many wins that they have put together this season. They can absolutely win four straight, easy, but I don't think it's going to happen. I still am going to say right here that I think the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be out of the Stanley Cup playoffs in this round, which will be, it is a disaster, as Frank said, but Cooper will have a job. I don't know if he'll have a job all of next year. You can give a contract extension and still fire somebody and buy out the contract. I don't think that's going to happen, but, man, it's unacceptable. This team has had put together a couple of great seasons, and boy, have they been a disappointment in the playoffs. They're more of a disappointment than the Washington Capitals were for a long time.
And who do you think is the X factor, in your opinion, so far for Columbus?
Well, it's not an X factor. It's the entire team. I mean, obviously, their goaltending. It's always, when it comes down to it, when you see an 8 seed beating a 1 seed, it comes down to between the pipes. And the Columbus Blue Jackets right now are getting some great net mining, but they're also playing some really cohesive team hockey.
Well, there's a couple factors here. A, John Tortorella, coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Solid.
He won the Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning back in 2004. The other thing is, here's a crazy thing. Tampa Bay scored the first 3 goals in this series. They were up 3-0 in the first period. Since that time, they've been outscored 9-1 in the series. Think about that.
That's crazy.
They scored the first 3 goals, and they've scored 1 goal in the last 5 periods of hockey. The other thing is, Tampa Bay has lost 4 straight playoff games. If you go back to last year, remember they had a 3-2 advantage over the Washington Capitals in that Eastern Conference Finals last year. Washington went on the road, won at home, went on the road and won a Game 7 in Tampa. So, you know, Tampa, unfortunately, they're not playing well. And the one thing, I still think Tampa's going to come back and win the series.
Well, Chris, it's not that they won't come back and win it. And like I just said, they could easily win 4 games straight. And sometimes it takes getting shell-shocked like they just did at home
with Columbus before. Because Columbus, they started out last year with two wins on the road in our nation's capital. However, the big difference is Columbus or Washington started Philip Grubauer in both of those games.
Yep. Before Braden Holtby
and
came back.
They pulled him for Braden Holtby, and everything changed.
No, I agree.
Tampa Bay is not going to pull Andre Vasilevsky.
No, absolutely not. But that's the whole thing. Right now, no one's even having that conversation because he's playing so well.
You can't have that conversation,
The difference is, Chris, and I was going to bring that up as well about last year and the start they had against the Capitals. The difference is they got that experience last year of going up and then blowing it. And I say experience is everything in the postseason. This team is a playoff grizzled team now and a team that can play well. And I don't think that we'll see the same letdown we did last year, although the Tampa Bay Lightning are as formidable a foe as any team in the National Hockey League, and this team could still down 0-2 right now in the first series, and I'm saying this as much as, remember I said last week, if you heard that, I said they're either going to go out in the first round or they're going to win the Stanley Cup Final. Don't count them out. If they get by the Columbus Blue Jackets after this, this could be the scare and the fear they need to take them all the way, because this team is as talented as any team in the National Hockey League.
The fact that Kucherov is going to be suspended for Game 3, is that going to be a big factor for Tampa Bay?
It could be. Well, I mean, he's their best player.
It's huge when you lose your best player. But again, in a game like hockey, you can rally around it, and you can overcome something like that. And this team has the firepower and the netminder to overcome that. Listen, we'll move on because I got something that I didn't want to talk about because it had to start so damn early today. But it is time for Fact This.
This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it is a fact. Tiger Woods started today 2 strokes behind the leader, Francisco Molinari, and playing in the final threesome in a little that again happened this morning earlier than it should have. This is the 3rd major Tiger has contended for since coming back to the PGA Tour full-time for the most part a little over a year ago. I got to say something, man. No matter what happens today, Tiger Woods is back. When the putter starts working, when that blade starts working like it did yesterday, and he's hitting those long bombs, man, I've never seen anyone, maybe Jordan Spieth comes to mind recently, that when his game is on can read greens like Tiger Woods has throughout his entire career. And that's the one element of his game that he's needed to recapture to be able to make runs at majors, and he has seemed to recapture that. I'm trying not to look at the board to see it because I'm recording it. I want to go home. I'm going to spend my entire morning when I get home watching the Masters from the beginning of today and that, but this is one hell of a Masters tournament. You had at one point everyone on the leaderboard for a bit yesterday had won a major championship, and that is incredible when you see a star-studded field like this and guys that just seem unflappable. You're only going into the final round, and you've got a leader with 13 under, 11 under. Those are Tiger Woods numbers. At times when he was winning the Masters, he was 5-6 strokes up at 11 under and 15 under, and yet here he is in contention, and the leader going into the final round was 13 under in Francisco Molinari, who, by the way, is a phenomenal golfer. Watch this guy. He's not tall. He's kind of a little short and squatty, but you want to talk about a guy that can fire darts under unbelievable pressure. Molinari's as good as anybody on this tour, and we're finally getting to see that. But how cool is it, and I'll let you both chime in on this, but how cool is it to see Tiger Woods in his 40s actually back? And did you ever think you would hear Tiger roars again from galleries after all the problems he had less than a decade ago?
Well, I never discounted the guy coming back, although I feel like I'm one of the few people who actually roots against Tiger Woods. Like, everybody likes Tiger. I don't really like Tiger. So, I mean, I don't know. It's not that I have a guy that I've always liked Adam Scott, obviously, being a UNLV guy. I like Adam Scott. But, yeah, Tiger's never been a guy that I've rooted for. I mean, even going back to his younger days when he was just coming on the tour, I don't know. There was just something about him that I really didn't like. Maybe it's his smugness. I don't know. But, you know, I never really cared for Phil either. But I think the fact that Tiger is in contention, look, it's great for ratings. You know, if you're the Masters and you're CBS, you couldn't ask for anything better. And the fact that it's been a pretty good tournament, and you've got a lot of unanswered questions going into today, yeah, certainly having Tiger in contention is good.
Yeah, no question about it. He is. We'll see today. It's really cool to see it. And you know, the only thing I can say since all the Tiger Woods broke, I haven't eaten at a Perkins restaurant since everything went down a couple of years
ago. Well, I've never had a waitress that probably looked like the girl did at Perkins.
Listen, we're going to take a break on the other side. We're going to fly through this. We have Dave Musaw coming up from Buffalo Wild Wings to talk about Community Day coming up on Wednesday. And also, we're going to hear from Fran Riordan, the manager of the Las Vegas Aviators. We're back out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. We're here live in the Fox Sports Radio Cardinal Financial Studios. And joining me now on the phone, Dave Musaw, the manager of Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Before I put Dave on, I just want to say an honorable mention to Blazin', since we've got Buffalo Wild Wings going. I got to give a shout out to Chris Davis, man. After 54 futile at bats, he gets two hits yesterday in the 9-5 victory over the Boston Red Sox. It's been 211 days since Chris Davis has found first base, and he actually found first base and second base and got two hits in yesterday's game, a record of futility. And Mags, do we have that or no?
As I was walking up to the plate, I heard a fan yell, "One streak ends, another one begins," and I was like, no way, come on.
And one streak wins. I don't know if we'll see a hitting streak going, but he's got a one-game hitting streak going. We'll see how that goes today against the Red Sox. Joining us now, Dave Musaw, big event coming up this Wednesday at Buffalo Wild Wings, Community Day, and it's going to be from 5 to 8 o'clock. I will be there along with a lot of other people, things. You guys got a lot going on. Dave, talk about Community Day, man.
Hey, Brian, good to hear from you this morning. And, yeah, we've got a really big event coming up. It's Community Day. Buffalo Wild Wings as a company does this across the country. All locations will be doing something. We donate. We're helping out Boys and Girls Club across the country. Obviously, here in Nevada, we're doing ones for Las Vegas. Last year, as a company, we raised over $930,000 on that one day. Our goal this year is to raise over $1 million. So my location up in Montecito, we're putting on a pretty big event. We're pretty excited about it. We're going to have a DJ, DJ Paul from Good Times Entertainment, is going to be out there. I've got Vegas Valley Corvettes bringing out a bunch of really nice show cars. I've got Vegas Valley Mustangs bringing out some cars. The fire department will be out there with one of their fire trucks. I've got Doug Creasy Racing. My son is on his team racing go-karts. We're going to be out there with the whole pit. We're going to have guys from Alex Mercado Racing, CZ Racing, Gatom Racing. It'll be pretty cool. We have a bunch of games set up. We've got a face painter, a balloon artist. I've got Bobby Brown from BMX Stunts is going to be putting on a BMX stunt show a couple times an hour. We've got the dance team from the local Las Vegas Boys and Girls Club is going to be out there putting on a show for us. And we're giving away a lot of prizes, too, throughout the day. So all the proceeds are going to go towards Boys and Girls Club that day, and then we donate a portion of our sales for the entire day from my restaurant. So got some good prizes, too, man. We're giving away everything from hats and T-shirts and wings all the way up to a 55-inch TV. So there's some good stuff, good things to come out and try to get. So
can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. Dave Musa, the manager at Buffalo Wild Wings, the one out there at 215 in North Durango, where we're every Monday night during Monday Night Football season. I can't wait to be out there. I'll be out there all day. Dave, appreciate you, my friend. I'll see you Wednesday.
I appreciate it, bud. We'll see you Wednesday. Thank you.
Absolutely. From one to the next, let's move over to our Las Vegas Aviators Report of the Week. And joining us now on the line, Fran Riordan, the manager of the Las Vegas Aviators, AAA franchise of the Oakland A's, and playing at the most beautiful minor league facility in the country. And I don't think it's just my opinion. I think that's across the board, the brand new Las Vegas ballpark up in downtown Summerlin. Fran, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, my friend. I'll tell you, you know, from day one going out there, other than a typhoon-type weather last Tuesday night, I saw one of the most beautiful facilities. I've been to 25 now AAA facilities, nothing close to the Las Vegas ballpark. What are you seeing out there?
I'm seeing the same thing you are. It's one of the most beautiful places to play in all of minor league baseball, and seriously rivals some big league stadiums. So it's a lot of fun to play in front of our fans in a new stadium, and the amenities that this place has is just off the charts. It's just a great place to be.
Well, Fran, even before you got here, I want to know what's in the Kool-Aid of the Las Vegas Aviators, 9-1 to start the season. I was saying to kick off the show that what is it with new franchises when they come to Vegas? We saw the Golden Knights last year go off and light a fire. Well, the AAA franchise of the Las Vegas 51s, it's not the, all they did was change their names. They just came over here, Buffalo. But my goodness, man, what is going on? 9-1.
Well, I tell you what, we're just playing really good baseball. It's been really, really up and down the lineup. We're swinging the bats really well. The pitchers are doing their jobs. The defense is doing their jobs. Our base running has been very aggressive. And we've just put on some people in the last 10 days, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
How much of it is the excitement for these guys coming to Vegas? I mean, I know Campbell played here before. I was talking to him at Media Day, but other than that, I mean, this is, you know, it's a new thing. You're coming to Las Vegas. You're playing in an unbelievable facility. Has it lit a fire under these guys a little bit?
Well, I tell you, it's a great place to come to work every day. It's a great place to be, and there's 10,000 screaming fans every night, and they're really supportive so far. And the guys, I think, just feed off the energy of the newness of everything, the stadium, the fans, and they've responded really well. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have a lot of really good players. We have a lot of talented guys who are, you know, elite baseball players. So it's just fun to watch them play every night.
Well, yeah, there's no question. When you're seeing a team have this kind of success at the level right below the major league, you know you're watching a lot of future major league baseball players, and you'll get to see them out at the Las Vegas ballpark. I got to ask you, the other night I was there on Thursday night. I was talking to one of my friends, and I did look it up, and I did see that the record for triples in an inning is 5 back in, like, 1990. But yeah, that was so cool Thursday night to see 4 triples in an inning. I'm like, you know, in all my years of playing baseball and watching it at every level, including old man softball, I have never seen 4 triples in an inning in my life. That was pretty cool. Have you ever seen that before, Fran?
I have not, and it's funny you looked it up to find out what the record was, because we had some front office people in town, and we were talking after the game, and I didn't know what the record was, and he told me it was 5. It was Ed Sprague. He was in town, and he told me it was 5, and I was pretty surprised. I thought 4 would at least have tied the record, but that inning was so much fun, just the way we were hitting balls, and to have 3 triple or 4 triples in one inning and three triples back to back to back in the same inning was pretty incredible, and that really gives some momentum in that game. And that was a game where so much cool stuff happened. The inning before, we had a pass ball where not only did the runner from third score, but the runner from second scored. So it was just an exciting game, and you know, just really fun baseball to watch.
Well, it's cool, and even the third out, Fran, was a hit into almost a gap in right center field. For a minute, I thought, no way, we're going to see a fifth one, and the guy ran it down. But some great baseball out there. The facility's incredible. You've got a pool out in center field like they do in Anaheim. I mean, it is really something to see, and your team is really giving us a display. Again, you know, they start off by winning, you know, taking four or five from El Paso, then they sweep Sacramento in three straight, and now two out of four against Fresno. You guys go at it again today, right after noon. And, you know, I don't want to jinx you. Are you doing anything like the streak? You know, when people have a streak, they wear the same thing. I mean, you're not wearing the same underwear or anything like that, right?
Well, I am, but it gets washed every time.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. Right.
But any superstitions that you have when a streak like this is going? I mean, do you park in the same spot? Do you walk around the car the same way? Is there anything you're doing that has, you know, that you want to keep doing to keep this intact?
Well, I tell you what, I just had a donut for breakfast, and I've had some donuts on this streak. So I guess just maybe eating donuts has been a good luck charm for us. But other than that, no, I'm just going about my business as normal. You know, the players get into stuff like that, and it's a lot of fun. And yeah, especially if they're hitting well, they're pitching well, they keep their same streaks going or superstitions going. But yeah, I might have another donut before game time.
Make sure you do. I have a friend of mine that played pro ball years ago, and he had for three straight days, he had really bad stomach problems. So he was drinking Pepto-Bismol, and they won all three games. And they ended up winning seven in a row, and the poor guy, even after the stomach got better, he was taking Pepto-Bismol before the game just to keep it going. I thought, man, that would suck to have that be your pregame motto every day. But pretty cool. Listen, really appreciate you joining the show, Fran. I'll see you guys out there soon. Come to a lot of games. You got a game against Fresno again today. Then, of course, Monday you've got another one at 7:05 before you get back on the road and you head out to Sacramento and to Fresno. And Sacramento, I'm sure, licking their chops, trying to get some revenge. But we really appreciate you here in Vegas, and keep doing what you're doing, my friend.
Okay, I appreciate you having me, Brian. Thank you.
Absolutely. Again, Fran Riordan, he is the manager of the Las Vegas Aviators. Get out there if you haven't been to a game. It is amazing. Again, they're going at it again. 12:05 this afternoon. You can check them out in a matinee at the Las Vegas ballpark. Jose, before we get off the air, I got to give you a chance to shout out to the Las Vegas Lights, who just had a big win.
What's going on, Lights fans? This is Jose V here. Last night, your Las Vegas Lights pulled off the victory, got the 5-0 victory. Tommy Olsen with the clean sheet, and Irvin Parra with the hat trick. Three goals on the night. Next two games are on the road before they come back. Cinco de Mayo weekend, they will be back at Cashman Field.
There you go. Masters is on right now. There is it's a great tournament, man. If you get a chance and you're awake, I would turn it on. Wait for the show. We only got a minute left. So, and last thing I'll say, man, NBA playoffs too. Go Pistons, although they're going to get wiped out by the Milwaukee Bucks. And
good luck.
The Golden State Warriors, man, definitely flexed their muscle last night as well. Kevin Durant getting a little bit beefy and tossed out of the game. But overall, hey, I like the Clippers' grit. They're trying. This is Out of Line. My name is Brian Feldman. I want to thank everyone for joining the show. I want to thank Alan Snell for being on. Dave Musoff from Buffalo Wild Wings. Want to thank Fran Riordan of the Las Vegas Aviators. Of course, Jose Vellante chiming in and helping out with Facebook Live. And always my friend here in town, and of course, the guy right in front of me, Chris Magnum Chapman, for making all the things happen. You'll hear him tonight on Vegas Golden Knights Radio as he gets some good post-game interviews for you. We're here every Sunday, same time, same place, Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio. This is Out of Line, 8 to 9 a.m. Be safe. Have a great week. Check out the Masters, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. And I will say it here on the radio, go Knights, go. We'll see you next Sunday.